This is the Bike Snob of New York City, and you're listening to The Bike Show on Resonance FM 104.4.
This is The Bike Show. Here on Resonance 104.4 FM. A very happy new year to everyone listening. This is Resonance's first day back on the air after the festive break, and therefore the first bike show of 2011. And we kick off the year with a rolling interview. For long-time listeners to the bike show, you'll be familiar with the format. I go for a bike ride with somebody who's got something to say about cycling, about life, culture, or anything else that strikes my interest. But I've not been out on the bike for quite some time and didn't do as much riding as I'd like over the Christmas holidays, partly on account of the ice, partly on account of just being without a bicycle for a lot of the time. So we're going to have to rewind to August of last year, and a rolling interview with someone who in the world of urban bike culture has got quite a lot to answer for. The man's name is Bart Kaiser, and he was one of the three founders of Chrome, the company that made some of the most desirable bicycle messenger bags. Left Chrome after selling it on to someone else, and has come back in the last couple of years with a new project, Mission Workshop. And he was over with his team to open a London store for Mission Workshop, originally hailing from San Francisco, the Mission neighbourhood. They decided that London was the place to be. I decided to go for a ride with Bart on his commute up from Herne Hill, where he was staying with friends, to the Mission Workshop shop in the Truman Brewery in Brick Lane. And I decided to start out by getting the lowdown on the Chrome story.
Well, there's three of us that started the business, and the idea was kind of born basically from a long road trip throughout the United States after college. And you know, the two guys that I work with, they're both engineers, so they're bright guys. And one of them actually just had a job at Lawrence Livermore Labs, so he was gonna, you know, get a real job and just finish his master's degree. So, but the wacky idea to just start a company making clothing, and one of the, you know, part of that was a bag, a messenger bag. We had a lot of friends that were messengers in Colorado. So we made a bag for them, and you know, eventually the bag side of it really just started taking off. We had a great workspace in Denver downtown, really solid crew of messengers. You know, and at the time, wasn't the glamour of today that it seems like that a lot of the messenger scene has, and the even just cycling in general. I mean, I would ride around Denver at night by myself, and there'd be no one on bikes. Just kind of cruise around with my headphones on and just enjoying the night. Now there's as you're saying, the cycling scene's really blown up, and it's nice, sense of community.
We're about to be run down by a bus here. Well, watch out, look.
if you want to go on the inside, I can okay. risk my life for my art rather than risking yours. What kind of bags were messengers using before they were using chrome bags? Were they using like old postal service bags or kind of like plastic stuff, you know, the kind of the image you have of the, what's that film in the 80s? Guy, Kevin Bacon, yeah. Is it the movie?
Quicksilver.
Quicksilver.
Yeah, they're remaking that now, actually.
I bet they are. And who's...
Yeah, you know, there was a couple companies out already when we were doing chrome. Timbuktu was out. And, of course, like, Eric Zoe was making bags. And Globe and DeMartini. A lot of the older companies that started it. I think they based them on some of the postal bags that were used, mail carrier bags. But we, you know, our first bag was pretty basic, and we it was part of our first initial line that we did, the range, and it just got more and more refined as time went on, and we had a lot of help from the Denver courier scene, really making what they wanted, so.
And what do they want? What makes a good messenger bag?
Yeah, it just needs to be comfortable. It needs to be really easy to get in and out of because people make their money on like how fast they can deliver packages. So you don't want to be fumbling with a bag for 5 minutes, taking it on and off.
Look, Bart, we got here this blue paint with a steamroller parked in it. We've got a steamroller. In fact, no, three steamrollers parked in the London Cycle Superhighway 7.
But they're safe. They're not being damaged. It's all good.
So, fast on and fast off, accessible, durable, yeah. Presumably.
Durable, yeah. Of course durable, because that's definitely an abused piece of equipment. And we have a lifetime warranty, so it's got to be durable or you'll go broke.
So if something falls apart, they send it back to you and you have to fix it, is that the...
Yeah, fix it or give them a new one, whatever. Didn't happen very often, so it's not a problem.
And so paint the picture of your setup in Denver at the beginning of Chrome.
We were downtown, which downtown at the time had yet to be rejuvenated. And so we were in a kind of a dodgy part of town, just our style. And we had a big 5,000 square foot brick warehouse with just a beautiful space. When three of us were living in it, it was dirt cheap. So we were able to save a lot of money that way.
Hang on, Bart. Let's just stay behind this skip van.
Yeah. So we were. Yeah. There's three or, you know, sometimes five people living in there, and we're running the business out of it. So we were able to keep a really low overhead and able to have a good time and, you know, make it happen because it's pretty financially hard for some young 20-something guys to start a business.
How did you start with the financing? Did you get a bank loan or did you like hiss up your parents for some cash or what was it?
Some of all of that, you know. Maxed out credit cards, the whole deal. And you just kind of blind faith. You just keep going. Keep going and eventually it pays off. Eventually you're successful. Hopefully.
And where were the bags being manufactured?
It was all being made in Colorado, so right where we were at. It was at the factory. We teamed up with this really great factory, mom and pop shop, super solid. Colorado had a, back in the 70s and 80s, was the big, like, mountaineering backpack mecca. It's where everything was made. And all that kind of got shipped off to China, but the factories, some of them, were still there. And the people with the skills were still there, so we were able to find that and you know, that company grew with us and we had a really synergistic relationship.
And so was made in the USA part of the cachet of the brand?
Yeah, definitely. It's
we should go in here. Let's go in here. We're now taking the Southwark Bridge bicycle lane, which gets you to halfway across the bridge.
It is blocked off.
So yeah, made in USA, was that important to you?
Yeah, it was real important. The bike community seems really cares about that, at least as far as bags go. I don't know about anything else, but...
Okay, so now, thanks to the workmen who've decided to stash their... Oh, it looks like they're doing some work here. We are now going to have to portage our bikes over this concrete slab into the main highway. You know they've been doing this and remaking and making and remaking this bike lane for the last 3 years, and they've still not finished. Every time you think they've finished, they start again. So was that patriotism, or was that quality, or localism, or what was the thinking behind?
It was mainly localism, but also just being able to do smaller runs and really being able to keep an eye on what was going on. You know, if you do a big production run, 1,000 miles from where you're at, I mean, you have to go there and keep an eye on it, or things will get out of hand, and you know, the quality will.
They'll start sewing with candy floss rather than, right, you know, bomb-proof nylon,
yeah,
whatever.
And the whole thing's easier too, you know. It's like, I don't speak Mandarin or Cantonese. You're getting a little too smart. You're trying to get ahead. You're playing with my heart. Between the lines of red, I got to cut you down and make you hang around. Woo! Sing, feel it, love you, feel it. Don't make me wear it.
So then at the peak of production, I guess fairly soon before you cashed in and sold out, not sold out in that way, but you know, I can understand why anyone might want to do that. What was the scale of the business at Chrome?
We were probably doing close to, you know, around 1,000 bags a week. And just in my sweaty head, that's what I'm thinking right now.
And these bags, you know, I hate to say it, they're not cheap, are they? You know, you'll say, well, they do last forever, but that's turned into quite a business in terms of cash flow and revenue and all that kind of stuff that you had to manage. You know, you started off as three guys, and then,
yeah,
you know, how did you turn into like a proper business with a financial director, or did that never happen?
That actually... The financial director part never really happened, but we just kind of learn what, as we go, everything, you know, from, you basically have to learn every part of the business and how to do everything, and I don't think I do anything really that well, but I can do everything a little bit, so.
So you were doing your, like, MBA on the job.
On the job,
thing.
Yeah. And it, on the job, and it probably costs, like, five times as much, but, you know, in the end, like I said, it keep going and it pays off eventually.
And so, who bought Chrome when Chrome was sold?
We were approached by a guy who lives out in the Bay Area, and he's a really cool guy. He's been successful, and so we kind of partnered up, and the idea was to stick around. And I don't know, I just decided eventually to move on. It'd been 15 years, so it's kind of time for a change. So it took a couple years. And kind of did whatever, got the creative juices going again.
So what was the thinking behind Mission and the new company, the new brand, new products?
Yeah, it was just Mark, our designer, he had some good ideas about making bags that were really versatile, that could expand out, and kind of one bag that would solve your whole day's needs or travel or whatever, you know. And he started working on that, and at the same time we had the idea of, you know, to open the shop in the Mission. At the time, we didn't have a name or anything, and we found the space, same way we found it here, just cruising and looking, and it was just trash space. We had to tear down the ceiling, tear up the floor, and take out the walls, and we got a couple of our friends who worked with us at Chrome. They came over and helped us out, and started working with us again. So we kind of had the dream team set up, and we had some good designs. And
how did the Chrome react to this? Because they surely must be worried that you're going to be taking back your mojo. And
No, they're all good. They got their own good mojo, so it's all good. Plenty of room.
Yeah, hear that, listeners. There's plenty of room in the market for bicycle messenger bags. Bart says, just come on in.
Come on in, but be prepared. It's not fun in the beginning. Well, it's fun, but it's also painful.
Yeah, so aside from listening to all the back issues of the bike show as a way of finding out about London cycle culture, which is obviously the first thing that anyone would do.
Absolutely.
What did you do to kind of get a handle on things?
I'm kind of a research freak, so I definitely spent a lot of hours on the internet. Yeah, I kind of created maps with everything that I thought was cool. I would mark it on a map and kind of look at the clusters on the map, see what area worked.
So you had your giant map, like a kind of federal agent tracking down a serial killer.
Exactly.
Did you have a kind of profile of the ideal customer?
Yeah, we it's more of a know it when you see it kind of a thing. You know, we were looking around a couple of areas, kind of the Clerkenwell area, because it's pretty busy cycle traffic right there. And then I'd read about this place, Truman Brewery area, so I wanted to check that out. We're right behind it now. Go right. So we came down here to this area, and we just knew this was the spot. Just the energy, and just felt right. It was a really cool area, old, nice.
And it is kind of ground zero for hipsters. Is that a good thing or a bad thing, or is that just something you have to handle with care?
Probably handle with care on that one. There's that balance there where, you know, it's we don't want to get kind of put in that position where we're that kind of company, you know, but whatever happens, it kind of takes a life of its own.
And as if by magic, here we are.
You know, we were looking around, and part of the problem was people were taking too long to rent us the space. They were like, oh, you know, yeah, we'll get back to you in 10 days, and then it'll be like 6 weeks. And meanwhile, we had flown out 5 people. We were ready to start working. So around the same time, we were getting a little exasperated with the speed of things. John from 14 called and said, hey, we were talking, and we've got more space than we need. You guys want to split the space with us? And yeah, sounded like a great idea. These guys are really nice, really cool. And so we're like, do you mind if we completely remodel the space? And they're like, yeah, go for it. So we spent about, basically, it's only like a week, but we were working all night, all day. And we already pre-built, as part of the faith thing, we built our entire store and had it ready to ship over. So we made it so it would collapse and all go really small and flat. And so we were able to do it pretty fast. So we had it boxed up before I came over here, and then we just shipped it out. So it took us like a week to set it up. And I found out here, we found a shipping container, cut that up, made a wall out of that. And so,
shall we go inside?
Yeah.
So here we are, and you've got your bags on display. You've got oil drums and the shipping container. It's like got this definite industrial feel. Let's have a look at the bags. Do you want to pull one down and talk us through what's sort of emblematic of the concept?
So this was our first design, and it actually went through like 4 redesigns when we're doing it. Mark's a bit of a perfectionist.
Now, I'm going to have to say that I'm extremely pleased that after 16 years of making bags, you've decided to add another strap. You know, you kind of slow learners, all those referrals to osteopathy clinics and remedial physical therapy.
Right,
you've put the second strap that was always missing on a bike messenger bag.
Yeah.
it was probably like 2003 or 2004 over at Chrome, we introduced a couple of backpacks. And
because it's ridiculous, isn't it? I mean, I did have a single-strapped, I think, Manhattan Portage, simple waterproof bag that I bought in New York, in fact, I think in the 90s. I would carry stuff, but it was quite big, and I would end up, you know, taking the whole shopping load in groceries and whatnot. And then I was wondering, why is my left hand numb? Why am I got this terrible ache in my left shoulder? And I realized it was because of the bag. Is it a problem, the single shoulder strap?
For some people it is. I mean, it was for me a little bit. I wore the Messner bag for a long time, and I always had a little bit of a tweak in my back, and I never knew why. And then long chiropractic exposure and wearing a backpack eventually cured that. But we do have a single shoulder bag as well that we're doing.
So let's get back to this one. You've got your two shoulder straps, so it's a backpack.
It's a backpack, yeah. We did kind of threw everything at it. One of the things we did was we brought some of the mountaineering elements in it, the ones that work for urban use. We did a frame sheet, an internal frame sheet inside. It's got carbon fiber stays.
A frame sheet, what does that mean?
Yeah, it's a polyethylene. You'll see it's, if you feel under the padding, it's basically solid. So if you look, it doesn't collapse on you.
Okay, so why is that a good thing?
Well, it distributes the weight really well, and it also gives you the ability to, when you use a waist belt, you can actually carry the weight on your hips. Keep things from poking you in the back as well, because you can, I'm sure with like the Messner bag or a lot of other backpacks.
With a whole lot of tins of baked beans in there, you're going to get all kinds of lumps and stuff.
You've got to get your T-shirt and layer it properly and whatever. And then the big feature on this bag is the whole expansion. So the bag right now is slim and compact and still a big bag, but kind of carry everything you need for the day in here. You've got a lot of pockets. You have easy access to it.
And it's made of a kind of, what's this, Cordura type of thick
actually,
nylon?
There's quite a few fabrics on here. This one on the side here is it's a 1000D Cordura, but it's got a urethane film backing. This is actually fabric that's made for the military. We use a few military fabrics on here because it's really the only thing you can find that's made in the USA that has a lot of really good quality. Military, they don't really care about the cost, and they have really high specifications.
Do you not feel a little bad about that? Because every bag you sell means that there's some hero out in Iraq or Afghanistan who's going short. Have you not got ethical issues about that?
I couldn't sleep for a couple of days, but then I was thinking about all those people I was employing on the East Coast in this factory with their starving children, and kind of made me feel better.
You heard it first here. Mission Workshop is part of the military-industrial complex of the United States of America.
Yes.
So you've just undone the kind of a zip on the side.
Yeah, it's
here.
Got a waterproof zipper.
It's got a waterproof zip.
All the way
and
around.
The thing is just concertinaed out.
Yeah, and when it comes out, you can put, it's about 65 liters in it.
So you could put a small dog in here.
Yeah, you could put a pretty big dog in
pretty
here.
Pretty big dog.
Yeah, he'd have to crunch over a little bit. But
has that been done?
Yeah, got dogs and babies. Not myself, but these pictures have been sent. So, yeah, it gets pretty big, but you can also, it's got some cinch straps here, another cool thing about these, and so you can lock it in at different levels. But yeah, we did the volume test on it. We got 15 gallons of rice, so I guess that comes out to about 65 liters.
And how much does it weigh empty?
It's about 4 pounds, so 2 kilos, is that right, roughly, something like that?
That's quite a weight, isn't it?
This is the large one. It's a big bag. So, but the fabrics are all really pretty light fabrics, it's just a big bag. So we've got the smaller size that gets a little more manageable for kind of day-to-day use. But.
And is it pretty waterproof?
Yeah, all the fabrics are they have urethane coatings on them, so they're all it's all nylon with urethane, and we do the waterproof zips, and also a lot of water. The waterproofness comes from the way that the seams are sewn and the way that they face. And yeah, there's just a lot of details that go into making a bag weatherproof, pretty much. I mean, you wouldn't take the scuba diving, but I mean, not in the water, at least.
And so where are these bags made?
These are made in Colorado. These are made at the same factory that we've been working with for the whole history of Chrome. And it's great. It's almost like kind of a family thing because we've been working with them for so long, and it's nice. It's almost like we have our own factory without having to actually run the factory. So,
how many people work in that factory?
There's about 20 over there.
you know, and it fluctuates. We're trying to help them employ more, you know, let it grow again.
Do you think that kind of vertical integration and short supply chains is coming back, as opposed to the outsourcing model where you just make a contract with someone in China who just sends it all back?
I think it's going to come back to that a lot because fuel issues, you know, you're going to eat up a lot of the cost savings when it's shipping all the way across the big ocean. Plus, as the dollar gets hammered, you know, it becomes less profitable for companies to go overseas. And the other thing is you can do tighter runs. You can keep lower inventory. You can control things better.
So how many bags are you making at the minute? You said that at the peak at Chrome it was 1,000 a week.
Yeah, I think that's about right. I don't know. I'd have to sit down and do the math. I don't remember piece quantities that well, but yeah, right now, I mean, we're just ramping up, so we've got our factory at full tilt. They're making everything they can.
And that's how many?
I think we're probably making a few hundred a week right now, 300-400 maybe.
So these are carefully designed, made in the USA, made of the strongest stuff, and you think they're the best design out there. How much does it cost to buy one?
Well, over here, the big one is 215 pounds, and the smaller one's 200. And the Messenger bags are about 130 to 160 pounds.
And where does that put you in relation to, you know, the rest of the market?
Yeah, I think it's probably a little more than Chrome is over here, I would think. And then it's probably on the upper end for sure. But I don't know. There's not a lot of bag brands over here that based in the UK, so everything's kind of imported. Like there's Freitag, which is more fashiony, but theirs are around the same level, maybe a little more expensive even.
And plans for the future?
Yeah, I don't think too far ahead, you know, just keep going. But we want to really build a European presence and, you know, wouldn't mind having a place in Southwest France, go surfing maybe, so make some euros.
And finally, I've got to ask you, as someone who's started something, made it a huge success, and then is starting something again and it's looking like it's going pretty well, what would be your advice to any young designer, entrepreneur who wants to do something in cycling or, you know, mm-hmm. something else? I mean, what are the things you've got to get right?
A couple of things. One is just keep moving forward. Just always just keep pushing forward because it'll look like it's not going to happen or things won't work. But if you just keep going, it either will or at least you can say you did the best you could. And the other thing is just keep your costs low, keep your overhead low. That's why when we had the three of us all living in one warehouse for 6 years with a business in there too, you know, you get one bill, you have your rent, you have your phone, you don't have three rents, three phones. So if you can do that without killing each other, you know, you'll be able to make it. So, cause in the beginning, it takes a lot of work.
I was riding with Bart Kaiser of Mission Workshop. And if you want to contribute to Bart's surf fund, he's after getting that surf spot down in the southwest of France, you can inspect and buy Mission Workshop bike bags, apparel, as they call it in the United States. That means clothes and shoes over at Shop 14 in the Truman Brewery just off Brick Lane. That's it for the bike show this week. Happy New Year. Happy New Year to One Life Left, who are on in just a minute's time for what they pledge is going to be the biggest show of their lives. Oh, no, the biggest show of this year. Sorry, got that wrong. Biggest show this year from One Life Left, from me. Goodbye.